Hello, it's Ed Gamble here from the Off-Menu podcast that you're currently listening to. I am on tour now. The show is called Hot Diggity Dog. Make sure you go and get yourself a ticket. I'm probably coming to a town near you if you live in the UK and Ireland. And Ireland, Dublin and Belfast. Do go to edgamble.co.uk, buy yourself a ticket, and I'll see you for an evening of Hot Diggity Dog.
Hot Diggity Dog!
Thank you, James.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And if you just sniff the podcast, you can really tell how much love's gone into it. Welcome to the Off Menu Podcast with me, Ed Gamble.
Oh, my.
And Lady Gaga over there, apparently.
James Acaster,
yes. This is one of the famous James Acaster hangover episodes where we recorded three in a day where James has a hangover. So if fact fans looking out for that to happen, this is one of those episodes.
Also, like by now, I mean, you know, if this is the third one that comes out, but, you know, obviously, listeners will be able to figure out which one's going to be a hangover episode before they even listen because of the photo. They'll be like, he's wearing that
yeah.
T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same shirt.
He's not wearing that T-shirt. He's wearing that face.
He's wearing that goddamn face.
That hangover
face.
He
looks like a sack of shit.
Anyway, welcome to the Off Menu Podcast where we ask a special guest in our dream restaurant.
Their favourite ever starter, main course, dessert, side dish and drink, please.
Yes, and this week we are very excited to have another chef guest in the dream restaurant.
Yeah, cooking it up.
The chef guest this week is Simon Rogan. Very excited. I am a fan of Simon's work. I've been to his restaurant, L'Enclume, in Cartmel, in the Lake District, which... comedy fans as well. I know we've got a lot of comedy fans. We've got food fans. Comedy fans may recognise it from the first episode, I believe, of The Trip.
The first ever episode of The Trip.
Was in L'Enclume, and it's fantastic. I went for lunch there before a gig in the Lake District once. I had lunch there with Phil Wang and Steve Hall.
What a pair!
What a pair, and what a trair we were.
Did Phil send the wine back?
Phil did not send the wine back. It was many years ago before he grew a pair.
Oh yeah, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, Simon has also got he's got two in Cartmel now. He's got a restaurant in London called Roganic. He's just opened two restaurants in Hong Kong, which is pretty cool. So he's got lots going on, and we're very excited to find out what his dream meal is. As much as I respect the man and enjoy his food, if he says the secret ingredient, which we will announce now, then he will be kicked out of the restaurant. And this week, the secret ingredient, James, is...
Courgette.
James hates courgette, spiralised courgette.
Don't remind me of something that's better than what you are.
Well, I kind of agree.
It just makes me think of spaghetti and how much I like spaghetti, or just courgette on its own. I prefer to courgette. The actual, it does nothing for the courgette to make it all spiralise and put it like that. It takes away all the flavour. I think I don't like the texture of it when it's like that. It's the worst way to have courgettes and the worst way to have spaghetti all in one.
Yeah, I think you're probably correct. I went through a phase of I bought a spiralizer. I used to eat quite a lot of courgette when I was going through an ultra low carb phase.
Yeah.
But now you can buy these noodles which are made from a specific thing that are zero carb and taste a little bit more like noodles.
Okay.
So I'm on those now.
Are you?
Yeah, but the courgette, absolutely not.
No.
The courgette's a wonderful thing. So, I doubt that the Michelin star chef Simon Rogan will be mentioning courgette.
We'll see.
If he does, it will be a good bye-bye from us.
Yeah, it will be a good bye-bye. But let's see what he says.
So, for now,
give him a chance.
This is the off-menu menu of Simon Rogan.
Simon Rogan.
Welcome to the Dream Restaurant, Simon Rogan.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
Ah.
Welcome, Simon Rogan, to the Dream Restaurant.
Now,
yeah, it's very swish, I must say.
Pretty swish, right?
It is. I mean, I would love a restaurant like this.
Yeah.
Super swish.
If you, we're recording this in the top room of the Bill Murray, which doesn't feel like a swish restaurant, but the beauty of the Dream Restaurant, Simon, is you can imagine whatever you like in here.
Exactly. And, I think we're going to come up with a few good things. So,
yeah.
Why not?
I reckon so.
I'm inspired.
When you walk into a space the first time that you're thinking about opening a restaurant in, do you stand there and just try and visualise where everything's going to go, what it's going to look like?
Yeah, well, pretty much we normally take on restaurants that are already there.
Right, okay. Clever.
And doesn't need too much imagination.
Right,
so it's a case of like what we want to strip out or not.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really gone for the sort of empty space, new build sort of thing. So, I haven't got the imagination for that, I don't think. So.
I'm very similar. I've been looking around houses at the moment, looking where to move to. And my girlfriend's amazing at going, and we can put this here, and this here. It's like, no, we need to go to the houses that are already finished.
It's always easier copying other people's tastes,
exactly.
I think, you know, and some of it is a bit naff, but more often than not, it's good enough for me.
Yeah. Well, James exploded in there because he is playing the waiter in this. He's a genie as well, which means he can magic you anything that you want for your meal from wherever around the world, from whatever time in your life.
Right, okay.
Well, I'll tell you what, good. It's my pleasure.
Yeah. He's a very polite genie waiter as well.
Yeah. It was always handy to have a genie waiter.
Yeah.
Have you had any particular like amazing waiters who work at your restaurants that stick in your mind as being the best? And do you have someone who sticks in your mind as being the worst?
Both, really.
Yes.
But if I tell them, if I want a pay rise, or they come around to kill me.
Right.
One or the other. So I sort of keep that under my chest, really.
What's the top quality you look for if you're hiring a waiter?
Mm. Someone's really enthusiastic, you know, got an eye for detail. For UK stuff, it's a fairly dying breed. I mean, we don't see it as a trade over here like they do in France, where it's an art form. It's it's seen as a bit of a sort of a negative sort of position,
like a stopgap sort
exactly,
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So why should I wait on this guy because he's got some money? You know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But how about let's wait on this guy and make some money? That's the more the attitude I see. You know.
So it's an art form in France, is it?
I think they look at it as an art form, yeah.
Anything
in the food field, they look at as being sort of right at the top of the tree, really.
And, it's all part of the experience.
They've got the history, haven't they? Let's face it, quite envious, and you know, sometimes I think I was born French, really, but I come out English, unfortunately. But I love France, and you know, the whole lifestyle. It's something that really appeals to me.
Yeah.
Is there a meal you've had in France where you remember a particularly, like, the service was impeccable?
Well, yeah, I mean, the best meal of my life was a restaurant called La Ferme de Mon Père.
Uh-huh.
It was a guy called Marc Verrat, so he's in the sort of hills of Mont Blanc in the Alps. So we left Cumbria to go down to Manchester after service in the restaurant that night, flew very, very early, like 5 o'clock in the morning, into Geneva, back into France, arrived in Megève, where the restaurant was. And then, you know, it started snowing in April, which was pretty magical. And then we went to the restaurant. It was basically a recreation of his father's farm. So it's just like a film set. So you look through the, there's a glass square in the floor and you see some live pigs, and you look over in the corner and there's a cow looking at you through the wall. And it was just an absolutely magical place.
So all specifically to recreate his father's farm.
Absolutely. There was hay bales here, and you know, it was just like being on a film set.
That's amazing.
And the meal was incredible, and you know, I took great inspiration from that, because it's basically based on alpine herbs, wild herbs, flowers, and sort of flora, which I'm very passionate myself.
Yes.
See, Lake District's not the Alps, obviously,
yeah.
but it's the nearest got to it. So
yeah.
He was a big inspiration for me. So that was the most memorable meal in France that I can remember.
Do you get up early in the morning and go out and find stuff in the Lake District to use to...
I used to.
Right, yeah.
Not so much anymore.
You got other people to do that.
Yeah, we've got other people to do that. I mean, to be quite honest, we sort of took a step back on the foraging side, because, you know, sort of you grow up and sort of look at things and what you're doing, and then you realise a lot of it is a load of shit.
We always start the meal with the choice of still or sparkling water. What would you prefer?
Well, much to my exec chef's disgust, because he's a real still man, and he thinks that's a man's water. If you like, I go for sparkling myself. As much as possible at the moment, because I'm trying to use a little bit of weight, and I've told if the more you drink, the more you feel full up because of all the bubbles in it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's sort of got a bit of a double whammy for me at the moment. So sparkling water, definitely like a bit of fizz in my life.
Yeah.
Definitely need to lose a bit of food. I've been eating like an absolute Trojan recently.
That's surely allowed as a chef.
Yeah, a little taste maybe, but you know, I've been absolutely caning it recently, because we've just opened a couple of restaurants in Hong Kong.
Amazing.
So I've been out there quite a lot, and obviously there's nothing low calorie about Chinese food. it's been quite tough on the old physique. So trying to lose a bit of weight recently.
You've been off the leash over there.
Yeah, definitely. It's sort of morning, lunch, afternoon, dinner, right the way throughout the night. I mean, we think we've got a lot of restaurants in London. You want to go to Hong Kong, it's just absolutely incredible, and it never stops.
Oh, man.
So, definitely sparkling water.
To fill yourself up a little bit.
Definitely.
Quite clever. It's pop lobs or bread! Pop lobs or bread! Pop my arms or bread!
Right, well, sorry, I eat an absolute shed load of bread. Day in, day out. I don't know how many.
Do you have a shed full of bread on the farm?
Not shed full of bread. We have a shed full of bread at the restaurant. We have our own bakery, which is great. I eat bread day in, day out. So if I'm out, I'll go pop a dom.
Yeah.
I'm probably the only person I know that likes lime pickle, to be fair. I love it.
It's great, though.
The hotter the better. You know?
We've chatted a little bit about lime pickle in the past, and it's just, for me, it's just quite a confusing flavour.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't really know what's going on here. But I guess for you, as a chef, you know exactly why it tastes the way it does and what's going on there.
Yeah, mainly due to the kingfisher you're drinking with it, I think.
It's a big
help to actually getting through it. But I like dips. You know, I like the actual sort of mixing those dips, the yogurt and the lime pickle and whatever's on offer, and you know, all the little vegetables as well. It's a great way to start. I mean, when I was on Great British Menu, I think I did so well was because I was actually living in Marylebone at the time, and I had an Indian every night and a pint of kingfisher, and it took me away from the filming and just sort of really relaxed me. So I'm a real lover of a ruby and Indian food.
Every night you could eat a curry every night.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It helped. It was literally 20 yards across the road, I didn't have to go anywhere for it.
Did you
eat
the same curry every day?
No, I did alternate. No, I was being really sort of quite imaginative with my choices. So I wasn't sort of saying like, oh, I'm just going to wear the same tie for luck.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't going to have the same curry for luck. Yeah. So I did all right that day. I had a different curry. So, you know, it worked out okay. But yeah, good, big lover of Indian food. Food.
The beers that you get in like Indian restaurants, Chinese restaurants, I think are actually some of my favourite beers.
Yeah.
So like a kingfisher or like a tiger.
Yeah.
Cobra.
Yeah, yeah.
I love them. I love them so much. When I started noticing that you can actually just buy them in the supermarket, I felt so weird the first time I had a Cobra and I wasn't in an Indian restaurant.
Would you have it without Indian food?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would, yeah.
I'd never do that.
It feels so weird, Ed. I love doing it, but it feels so strange to be sitting there in your living room just having a Cobra. it's very strange.
I think they're very refreshing, the beers, so I think you can drink them with anything.
Is a Cobra less fizzy, is that right?
like Cobra. I'm more of a Kingfisher man myself. I don't really drink much Cobra.
I thought like a Cobra is sold on the basis of it being less fizzy, so it's almost like the opposite of what you're using sparkling water for.
Oh, right.
So you're less full up.
Oh, I don't want to drink that.
Don't
then.
Touch it. Yeah.
I won't touch that. You want
double fizz.
Yeah, exactly.
So we come to your starter, so the big leagues now.
Yeah.
The big boys.
The showstoppers.
Well, it'd probably have to be Som Tam papaya salad, because I absolutely love Thai food as well. Mm. And here we go again. It's great with a Singer beer. Right. there is nothing. It's a match made in heaven as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Papaya, really gorgeous papaya, fragrant, fresh, crispy papaya salad with a Singer beer. And I could eat it all day, every day, for the rest of my life. It's a desert island food, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's so healthy for you.
Yeah.
And I don't need to drink so much fizzy water.
So what else is in the salad, then? What ingredients have we got?
Got papaya, obviously green papaya in it. Yeah. You know, you've got some fish sauce, you've got peanuts, you've got tamarind juice, you've got coriander, tomatoes.
Mm.
So, you know, all those really fragrant, lovely palm sugar as well, a little bit of sweetness. So you've got all those lovely, lovely flavours, and it's just so nice. And like I say, with a Singer beer in the other
you've
hand.
You've been very clear about that. Side,
yeah, it's got to have a Singer beer, but actually, papaya salad, no, out the window. It hasn't got a Singer beer, you know. It's got to be that combination.
This is quite... So I think you're the third chef we've interviewed. Mm. And chefs tend to... We found that chefs do tend to pair each course with a certain drink as well. I guess we've had it would just be that starter. I guess you're just used to thinking about what's it going to go
The whole experience.
Yeah, well, I think that's because chefs drink a lot.
That's very much what we're understanding over the course of doing this podcast is that chefs drink a lot. Although we had Tom Kerridge on the podcast.
Oh, God, the king of drinkers. Yeah. Well, was the king of drinkers.
Well, exactly, but he said, as it's a dream restaurant, his drink was 24 cans of Stella.
I've actually left Tom a few nights after 24 cans of Stella. I'm telling you, I mean, he's as fresh as a daisy, and I'm absolutely dying on all fours sort of thing. So yeah, I've had a few sessions with him, and it's not pleasant. I'm telling you, especially the next morning.
Yeah.
That's
when we got the inkling that the chefs might drink more than non-chefs.
We had a pub in Cartmel for a time, not for long. Yeah. Obviously, we weren't very good at it because we drank all the profits. So, but no, it's probably part of the job, really.
Is it part of the job, I guess, because you're just finishing so late?
Pretty much, yeah. It's a release. Obviously, we're going to talk about my favourite drink in a minute. And, obviously, there's no... You don't have to guess what it's going to be.
It's very beer alcohol.
But it's something just a little bit of a release after work, you know.
I haven't thought about this a lot. So if chefs, you're not going out for like a massive night after service, are you, or is it just a few drinks?
No, well, I'm a little bit older these days, so going out and getting tanked like probably a lot of the younger guys do. I mean, that's sort of a bit away from me now. I don't go too crazy.
What time
anymore.
Are you up for service? Or for not for service, for prep.
I'm up early. So I'm up as early as possible. So I was up at 6 o'clock this morning. I bombed it around the farm to have a look at a few things before I jumped on the train down to London. So
just the idea of going out after work and getting hammered and then having to get up at that time of the morning.
We haven't got the pub anymore, so I normally go home.
Yeah.
So I just go stroll into bed. There's no going out and getting hammered anymore. It's get in the...
Cartmel doesn't get Larry after...
Well, it's got a decent pub call, actually. There's six, for a village the size of it, there's six drinking holes now, so
it's such a picturesque town, though. You don't imagine
beautiful.
It kicking off. And I've been to Cartmel. I've been to Longclume. I came to Longclume for lunch. It's an absolutely amazing meal. But I couldn't imagine it being a Larry night out.
We'll be Larry this weekend. It's Cartmel races.
Okay.
So
it's
got the smallest horse racing track in the UK. Oh. So it's race weekend this weekend. It's not Ascot, obviously, but we have a...
How small are we talking, Simon? Because I'm imagining just the size of this table.
It's a bit bigger than that. I don't know how many miles it is, actually. It's
like a dog chasing its tail.
It probably takes...
one horse.
It's probably about a mile long, I would say. But it just sort of goes round and round, and it's just... tiny dinky little thing. It's quite funny. It's right in the village.
Yeah.
That can't remember you didn't
oh,
see
well,
it.
Yeah.
Well, it's so small you didn't see it. But yeah, it's a pretty wild time.
Yeah.
When the races are on, and you know how big the village is. We'll probably have, if sun shines, there's anything between 20,000 and 30,000 people.
Oh, amazing.
There. So it's
that's massive.
Do you do special dishes for that time?
No, to be quite honest, our customers hate it.
Right.
What's going on? Yeah, because they're normally on a busy weekend or a bank holiday anyway when we're full.
Yeah.
So all our customers are a little bit more well-to-do and they're not coming for the races. So they actually hate it because they can't actually get into the village for one thing. And it's just too packed. So it's actually not great for us, if you like.
Yeah.
So we've actually resorted now to having a restaurant on the races. So we take the other restaurant, Rogan & Company, and we got a tent on the race course, and we feed people there now. So
nice.
It's good. It's good fun. Good fun.
That's great. So you feel like you've... So how many... Is it two restaurants in Cartmel now?
Well, we've got two restaurants in Cartmel, and then we've got two in London, two in Hong Kong, and then we're opening another one in the lakes up near Bowness.
Amazing.
We're in a hotel in Point House up there. So very, very... exciting about that because it's a break from the norm of my normal style of food. So we were normally rooted in British ingredients and not sort of careering off too much from there. But this is about my travels from around the world.
Oh, great!
And I brought in a chef from the US, and you know he's got a great knowledge of world foods as well. So it's going to be a little bit different. Same ethos, organic and healthy and stuff like that, but more of a world influence. So it's something completely different.
Nice.
Which, it should be a lot of fun, I hope. So.
Well, that many restaurants, because you must be like, you know, I don't know how often you change the menus and stuff. Are you just constantly thinking of...
Constantly thinking,
yeah. This is the next...
Constantly thinking. luckily, I've got amazing teams in all of those restaurants, so I'll walk into Roganic tonight, and I'm, you know, since last week, I've been up in Cartmel, and we could sort of catch up, and then boom, we start talking about new dishes and changes and stuff like that. So they make it easy for me. If I was doing it all on my own, I wouldn't be here. I'd be six foot under. I wouldn't be able to take it. You know, I would be completely in a noose.
Sure.
But it's good. They make things easy for me a lot.
And you've been in Cartmel for a while now, right? Are they, the locals are all right with it?
Yeah, I'm still an off-comer.
Yeah.
I've been there 19 years now. Don't know how much longer I have to be there before not being called an off-comer.
Right, okay.
But yeah, we do all right for the village. And I mean, to be fair, and there's a lot of good things to go to in Cartmel now. I mean, there's always the sticky toffee pudding and Cartmel Priory and all these wonderful things, the races. But now, you know, we've got some really sort of great craft breweries, microbreweries, wine bars, say six pubs, all sorts of different gift shops. It's become quite a nice little place, and we've got a shop as well, sell our own merchandise. So
Were they a bit funny about you when you first arrived and sort of because to open another restaurant as well?
Yeah, I mean,
they would have thought you're trying to Rick Stein it. And, take over the whole town.
I think they thought who's this summer coming up and taking a sort of like a Northern guy's livelihood or something like that. But I mean, to be fair, at the time, it foot and mouth had just finished when I arrived there. So
suspicious.
It was a bit. Yeah.
That was the name of the restaurant before you got there.
Yeah. Well, it was quite an infamous project before I got there because it'd been being built for 2 years it's been renovated because it's a 13th century forge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all the renovations were going on before I arrived. So it was already like, oh my God, when's this going to be finished?
And,
you know, the locals were already a bit anti the idea. And obviously when we bought the product in, it was even worse because it's like, well, what's all this poncy sort of posh stuff? You know, we want a tea shop, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, it took a while and, you know, over the years, it's not been all moonlight and roses, but we're all one big happy family now.
Great,
we're all Team Cartmel, and I wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
I'm glad you said Team Cartmel and not Team Simon.
Yes, exactly.
We're all on Team Simon now. Yeah. How spicy are we talking for the papaya salad?
Oh, pretty spicy. Quite a lot of chilli in it.
You can handle,
for that
a
nice
that.
Crisp singer, you know, it's got to have a nice cooling.
Come to your main course.
Funnily enough, the main course isn't actually alcohol linked. I never thought of that, to be honest. But it takes me back to my first job when I was training. So I started off in a Greek restaurant in Southampton. I started as a 14-year-old, as a part-timer on a Friday and Saturday night. And I remember it was back in 1983, and I got paid £24 a week, which was an amazing amount of money for someone at school.
That's incredible.
It was amazing, working with two sort of playboy Greek guys who were a bit, they were a bit with the ladies and stuff like that, and they took me under their wing. And, we used to, finish the shift and go and play snooker or go to nightclubs and stuff like that. I was a bit young, but they got me in somehow.
A little bit.
Their looks got me in, I think.
14, 24 quid in your pocket.
The world was my oyster. Yeah. So when it came to sort of leaving school, it was like, do you know what? Sod this college or university. Yeah. I'm going to be a chef. Yeah. So I'm earning loads of money, and I'm with these two guys that get me into nightclubs. So I took a full time job as soon as I left school and
at the Greek restaurant,
and all of a sudden I was on £250 a week in those days, which was quite a lot of money. Having a great time, but then I went to Day Release College and realised that actually I was a load of shit compared to all the other guys that were in the class from really good country house hotels and places like that. So that really ignited the competitive nature of me and wanted to make myself better. Mm-hmm. So I moved to another hotel in the New Forest as an apprentice to a chef that had been at the Savoy for 12 years. So I can't get more classical than that.
And,
for a young chef, it's really important for a massive classical grounding. It's absent these days, which is... Yeah. Another story. So anyway, now I've gone to that job and I was getting paid no money whatsoever.
Oh, really?
And all the sort of reasons for taking a career as a chef were turned on their head. But by then I was absolutely in love with what I was doing. So
you're making less money in the posh country house hotel than you were at the Greek restaurant.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, but I wanted to make myself better, so it didn't really matter.
Did the Greek guys still come and pick you up and take you out to the nightclub?
No, they didn't. No, no, they weren't very happy that I left. But anyway, so my main course would be moussaka.
Right,
because I was the king of
well, James is the mash king.
I was the mash king.
When I worked at a pub, I was known as the mash king because I made very good mashed potatoes.
Okay.
So
it's really
nice to make the moussaka.
How did you make the mashed potatoes?
Moussaka is, of course, in The Lion King, right?
Yeah.
I made the mashed potatoes with full fat cream. Butter, loads of salt and pepper, and
a city's pour a whole Singer beer into it.
And the secret ingredient was potatoes.
I knew they were coming somewhere.
I was pretty good at it. Back in the
day. If you're doing that all day, every day, you normally become quite good at it, don't you?
Yeah.
So that's all I did. I was moussaka. I did the chips as well.
Take us through the layers, because I think there might be some listeners who aren't versed in moussaka.
Yeah, I mean, we went to town on the Venus Greek Taverna moussaka. It was normally, I think it's just potatoes and courgettes, obviously lamb mince and like a cheesy sauce on the top. I mean, we had potatoes, courgettes, peppers, aubergines, all over food. So it was potatoes first in the dish, then some roasted courgettes. Mm-hmm. Roasted potatoes first, roasted courgettes, then the lovely lamb mince, cooked down with a bit of cinnamon, so really, really nice and fragrant and tasty. And then laid over the top of that was roasted aubergines and roasted peppers, and then the cheese sauce went over the top.
Oh, great.
And we did it in massive trays like that, let it go cold and cut out big squares of it.
Cubes.
And it's chucked it in the oven and all melted, and it was delicious. So I always remember that, and I've loved moussaka ever since.
You don't see it a lot.
You don't.
Moussaka. No. It's waiting for some sort of like hipster regeneration, I think, moussaka.
Well, I think with Greek food, I don't know why, but you never see amazing quantities of amazing Greek restaurants in the UK. And when you think about it, it's probably one of the world cuisines.
Yes.
Look at what's on offer. Mm. But I think Turkey have taken most of the glory for the Greek food. So, I would put Greek food on a par with Italian or France for the history and the actual quality of what's on offer, but you don't really see it.
No.
So maybe that's next.
Yeah, I think that
a nice,
might be
really
next.
High quality yeah. Yeah.
Good if you
bring back
that.
The Venus.
Yeah, bring yeah, back yeah. The Venus. Yeah. Venus. Regenerate the Venus. Yeah. That'd
literally,
be amazing.
I can see if Nofidos and Michael are available to come in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're probably a bit grey by now.
Yeah,
so.
They'll yeah. still be down the nightclub.
They will, yeah. Yeah.
I really want that to happen now. I really want you to open a Greek restaurant, yeah. call it the same name, and then we can say, came up with an idea on this podcast.
Yeah, watch your space. Yeah.
Pay yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
Have you ever like included like dishes that inspired by them at that Greek restaurant?
Yeah,
or
yeah. When we opened Longclun, we were very much the style we are now.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a bit of a phase where I got a bit sidetracked and I went off around the world. So right. you know, I got inspired or sort of influenced by Spain and the Far East and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And there's a few dishes that crept on the menu that were from the Venus Greek Taverna. So I remember this meatball recipe we had at the restaurant, and I brought that back and we served it on a little syringe, and we made a tzatziki, but we made it and made it smooth and then charged it in a cream whipper, so it was like a foam and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually on the menu. Meatballs Mr. Nick would be proud of. So Mr. Nick was the father of Nofidos and Mike, who actually owned the restaurant. So little pointers from there was definitely on the menu, but obviously grew up quite quickly.
Oh, right, right.
So we had to, or else we wouldn't be in business for very long with stuff going on like that. So you know,
oh, really? people not keen on a meatball on the syringe.
When you're sort of really going for avant-garde and yeah. just like crazy techniques and stuff like that, you know, it's not to everyone's taste. So,
okay.
You know, it's everyone loves what we do, but then you get a little percentage that don't, and I want everyone to love what we do. So.
Sure. Still, I'd quite like to try that meatball.
Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So your side dish we've got a big Greek main here. Like, yeah. is the side dish?
I mean, they don't have to balance. Do
they don't have to balance.
No, not
at all.
It's a good choice. Whatever you want.
Well, I'm going to go for the potatoes because they are my favourite ingredient, and I've got it's got to be a gratin dauphinoise.
Ah,
got to be.
Oh, I mean, that's talking my language.
I mean, you don't need cutlery. I just use my hands. I got a dish, and I'm just.
I think it's
handing it into my mouth. You know,
my favourite way of preparing potatoes.
Yeah,
dauphinoise, because it's the vehicle for cream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Cream and
cream,
garlic.
Creamy, garlicky, cheesy goodness.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, and then obviously over the years, there's been so many different sort of techniques and little tricks and ways of doing it. Either you boil the cream and put the potatoes in and then just chuck it in a dish, or you layer the potatoes and then layer in the cream and the garlic. I'm pretty much of the layering technique myself, actually, because there's a little bit more care and... You know, when you cut through the dauphinoise, you've got lovely, neat layers and sort of that preciseness. And
when I've cooked dauphinoise in the past in like a glass thing, and then you can see what's going on. You can watch what's going on under the surface.
Yeah,
like an aquarium for potato.
Yeah, like an aquarium for potato.
Yes,
a potarium.
And right now, I'm looking at that, thinking that very thought. I'm thinking what I would have in my right hand, which I'd be drinking at the time.
I thought this was coming, Simon. Yeah.
And I didn't say anything for the lasagna. It'd have to be a glass of wine, wouldn't it? Really. That's probably the only thing I drink wine with, to be quite honest. But dauphinoise would be top of the list, I think.
And
other than the Greek salad.
Yeah, sure.
That would go better with the moussaka, sure. But
it would.
But you've got moussaka and then the dauphinoise potato, two tray things.
Two layers.
You're also thinking of service, of getting things out quickly, so you
it's
can just
all,
both in the
it's
oven.
It's all in the preparation.
Yeah.
So the less in the serving, the more you can concentrate on the right pairing for drinking.
Yeah.
Why is potato your favourite ingredient?
I just think they're so versatile. Mm-hmm. So many different ways you can eat them, you know. And we grow lots of them on the farm, and it's grow little tiny little potatoes. You just literally flake the skin off and mm-hmm. just barely cook them. We cook them al dente, actually, and they're just so, so tasty.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how many variations of potato dish there is in the La Russe Gastronomique, which is the chef's Bible, but I bet mm-hmm. it's thousands.
Right.
So I would say potatoes are the... I mean, and the mash is pretty crazy. Yeah.
If you had to rank your top five ways of doing potatoes...
Here we go.
Yeah.
How would you do it?
Well, Dauphinoise, definitely. Mash would be right up there, 50-50. 50% butter, 50% potato. Coronary.
I know you're the professional, Simon, but don't come in here and try and challenge the mash game. Don't try and knock him off his throne.
No, I'll leave that to him.
You've already got your Moussaka realm.
Yeah, that you preside over.
Boulangère as well, I reckon. It's in the stock and the onions. That's a really nice one.
I've told this story before, Simon. My mum does potato like boulangère and then roast the lamb on top of the potato so all the fat drips down.
Yeah, a bit like a lamb hot pot. Yeah,
a bit like a lamb hot pot.
Yeah.
What a great Sunday that is.
Yeah. What else? Like I say, just lovely little ones, just gently scraped, just loads of butter again and a bit of mint maybe. Just a really nice way to eat them.
You've not even mentioned the humble chip.
Well, chips, yeah, of course.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Chips,
you're not that bothered by chips?
Not really, no.
Let's drill down into this. You didn't seem bothered by chips.
I don't eat a lot of chips, to be honest, which is funny enough. I eat most potatoes in just about every way, but I don't eat that many chips, which is quite unusual.
People will be up in arms out there listening to this.
Oh, yeah, they'll be like, what am I?
They'll be screaming at the sky.
They'll be outside there with their pitchforks and their torches.
With chips on the end of the pitchfork.
How many was that anyway? I don't know. Was it four or five? I don't know.
I feel like
jackets, jacket potatoes. Well. Oh, come on, what? How did I forget that one?
What you're putting in that?
Because I'm thinking. Do you remember the Spudulike chains? Do you remember them?
Yeah.
You don't see them anymore.
No, they're gone now.
Yeah, so I'm thinking for Hong Kong, that might be our next little venture out there. Bring Spudulike to Hong Kong because I can just see them sat alongside all these little street food places.
Yeah.
A Spudulike chain in Hong Kong.
That would be amazing.
And the one I always used to have would be the chicken curry one.
Oh, yeah.
Loads of chicken curry on the top. It was absolutely heavenly.
Yeah, I like chicken curry in a jacket potato is a very good combination.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm just straight cheese,
Cheese.
Really?
Fill it with cheese.
Yeah.
Scoop out all the potato, throw that away.
Okay, you're describing loaded skins, Ed.
Oh, loaded skins.
Yeah. You're not describing a jacket potato.
I love loaded skins.
I bet you do.
I would always go for loaded skins as a starter in one of those restaurants that do loaded skins.
Actually, yeah. Can I change my starter?
I would always be disappointed when you get the loaded skins if there was too much potato left on the skin.
Yeah.
I always want it to be like just the skin of the potato and then a tiny little layer of potato and then straight.
Much meat and cheese and ham and stuff like that. That's a good call.
It's to make them in a pub, a different pub that I worked in.
Where are you, the skin king?
yeah, the skin prince.
Yeah.
But we would make those. But like, did them in the fryer, and they were always very. I didn't think we did a great job, if I'm honest.
Because
we'd deep fry the skins first and then load them up and put it under the grill.
All right.
But it was
controversial.
Still,
yeah,
it was
yeah.
well, just shit, really. Yeah. but it would still have some grease, oil on it from the. It wasn't good.
Yeah,
it wasn't good. I've always felt a bit bad sending because they sounded so good on the menu. I was like, I know we're going to do a really bad job of these.
You should never don't send anything out you're not proud of. That's what I've learned from things like Great British Menu and all these cooking shows. If you're not proud of it, don't send it out.
Yeah.
Chuck it out the wall. That's what normally happens. I don't like this. Bang, straight in the wall.
Straight on the wall. Oh, if I'd done that, though, there would have been a lot. I mean, that pub was a pretty bad pub, so there would have been a lot of stuff on that wall.
Yeah.
A lot of food on the wall. And the boss would have come in.
Have you ever thrown anything at the wall?
I might have in the past, yeah. But
when you were like
a long time ago. I mean, I actually grew up as a chef through the late 80s and 90s when there was a lot of enfants terribles out the Marcos and the Nicos and the Burton races and stuff like that, where it was a battle to get through the day in a kitchen. So you saw a few sights, and then when you sort of come out of that environment and you start going alone, you sort of want to be like them and you sort of go off in the same way, but then all of a sudden you think, actually, you can do better and get more out of people by not being this way.
Why is
plus you wouldn't get away with it. you get sued every five minutes. Yeah. So
why was that a thing? Why was that ever? Is it just something to do with the environment that gets people really intense, or is it just attract sort of angry men?
A bit of both, I think. Yes, the environment. Yeah, very pressurized, and you know, when you're seeking perfection and everything's got to be absolutely on the button, things go wrong and tempers fray, shall we say. And, you know, it's thankfully not happening not the these days. And, you know, rightfully so. And, you know, it was crazy times, definitely. No doubt about
that. That's when people realise they can get away. Because, I mean, the first person to have done, like, really just lost it. A chef is like, oh, the fuck is this? And have a go at everyone. And then realising, I got away with that. I thought I was going to be the end of my career. Everyone just took it and carried on. I know I'm doing that every day.
Keep doing that.
Because that's a real good release valve. I'm going to keep on shouting at people. Over time, I used to have that same place with the loaded skins. There's a chef there. What a bully.
Yeah.
Awful.
But was that like, where they used to pull your trousers down?
Yeah, well, everyone pulled each other's trousers down. Yeah, it was one of those kitchens.
Oh, really?
So it wasn't a proper, like, you know, it was like a chain kind of one of those family pubs with a soft play area.
I don't think I've ever worked in a kitchen where they pull their trousers down.
Yeah,
everyone. I don't think I have.
That's good to know. As someone who's been to one of your carriages as well, I'm glad to know that no one was pulling each other's trousers down.
Are most certainly at all times.
Good to know.
I want to point out that I wasn't pulling my own trousers down. It was like people were de-kicking me. I wasn't going, hey guys.
Yeah, but you do that now when you cook at home by yourself.
Yes, now
when
I cook at home.
It's the only way you can cook properly.
Victory. Every time it's gone well. But yeah, there's loads of all of them throwing knives at people's feet.
Yeah.
Steak knives. They get the jacket potatoes and bowl them across the tabletops because they're at dick height. So they just get you in the nuts with those. Putting Tabasco on your straw if you had a drink. Well. One guy used to heat up tongs on the grill and then hang them back up again and then ask someone to flip a steak for him and then they just get the tongue burn in their hand. Horrible place.
That's nasty. Sounds like you worked in the worst kitchen ever.
I did not like it.
Simon said he thought it was nasty, but when you were saying all of that, he was taking notes.
Going, this is great.
On pranks he could do in the kitchen.
Put them on the grill. So your drinks, we've already had a few drinks already. This is quite exciting.
Yeah, well, I mean, I could ponce it up and say something that, you know, to make me really sophisticated or, you know, clever or something like that. But everyone that knows me would know I'm lying. It's just basically gin and tonic.
Really? Right.
I mean, I'm a gin and tonic boy. I mean, that's it.
I think you're the first gin and tonic we've had.
Yeah, I'm a gin and tonic guy. When I go back to the pub, I actually invented a gin-based drink. I've sort of had a little bit of a deviation away from gin and tonic. It was called the Floor Clearer. So if you picture we're finishing the work, going after work, or if I'm off on a night, just go and sit at the bar, and it's a pint glass.
Lovely.
Quadruple gin in there.
Right.
8 ice cubes, and then just fill it up with a really spicy, hot, fiery ginger beer.
Oh, yes.
And Angostura bitters.
Yes.
So basically, the effect was as I drank more of this drink and went on to the next one, I got louder and louder, and the floor cleared. And that was it. We called it the Floor Clearer. Quite handy at closing time, obviously, because there's no one left.
Don't have to get
anyone out anymore. But then, so went back to gin. I don't drink it as bad as what I used to. Very sort of regulated now. Tanqueray is probably the gin of my choice.
Gin.
Drink too much of it, the W goes on the front of it instead of T.
Sure, yeah.
That's my drink. And that's
I think any drink that starts with it has to be in a pint glass.
Yeah.
It's going to be in there.
Yeah.
First of all, take a pint glass.
And I've tried taking that, you know, to other pubs.
You tried to ask people to make it.
But then realised it cost £25.
Yeah.
To actually drink it. And I just thought, God, were these costing £25 every time I drank one in my own pub? No wonder we were crap at it.
So it's a huge loss every single day. Yeah, you can't figure it out.
With profits.
I love the reason you won't get it in another pub is because of the price, not because you have to go, get a pint glass, quadruple gin.
Quadruple gin.
I mean, every time I did it, explain it, I did get a few raised eyebrows. Yeah. Where the quadruple gym was probably the first first big sort of obstacle to navigate for people actually pouring you one. It's like, no, don't be so stupid.
Especially be going in there with a tray of Dauphin was.
Yeah. But yeah, gin is my drink.
I've only got into gin and tonic recently, really. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
That's a good home drink.
It is. Yeah. It is. And it all started off with IKEA, actually, because I remember we went to IKEA in Warrington to buy some furniture, and we saw these lovely sort of ropey big chairs that you go and put in the garden. And thought, oh, they look really nice. And they just became our gin and tonic chairs out in the garden. I was just like, what can we do with these chairs? I know. Let's start drinking gin and tonic. So it's actually IKEA's fault that I become a gin and tonic monster.
Because they just thought people are going to sit in them.
Yeah.
And then they don't, but they weren't banking on a chef coming in and realising that they needed to pair sitting with alcohol.
Yeah. I need to use these chairs for something. I'm probably drinking gin and tonics.
In pint glasses.
Yeah.
I've just started drinking a crazy gin that tastes of seaweed.
Oh, really?
This from is Harris Gin. It's from the Isle of Harris.
Oh, yeah. And
but it really tastes of seaweed. And when I had it initially, I was like, well, I feel like I'm drowning. But now I'm into it. They say drowning is the most peaceful way to die. <That's>, really connecting with that.
That's beautiful, Ed.
Yeah, thank you.
My old flatmates, Joe and Kate, shout out.
Shout out to Joe and Kate.
They went on like a little gin making course and a gin course. And then, it was great. Every day, they made the best gin and tonics I've ever had. Still the best gin and tonics ever. Mm. To the point where actually I don't actually get gin and tonics now if I go out, because I always know it's not as good as Joe and Kate's gin and tonics. Yeah. Like, they have these big fishbowl glasses and
they're amazing.
So refreshing and cool.
What's in them? Cucumber or
I think
grapefruit's really nice in
there. They change it up, actually. They do put grapefruit in it. So I've had ones that they make with cucumber, with grapefruit, with a twist of lemon or orange. Yeah. But also, they just got some really nice, botanical gins and stuff, and so there's got some really great ingredients. I think gin and tonics are one of those drinks where, like, as soon as you have a better one than the ones you've had before, you can't go back. It's really difficult to go back to just having like bog standard gin and tonic. Mm. And then you could, I get again, instant headache from a bad one. I just can't hack it.
Well, that's, you find your one, don't you? And obviously Tanqueray is mine, where I can probably drink a whole bottle and not have a headache the next day. Basically, it's just the way it is. If I went off to Gordon's or anything like that, I'd probably wake up with an absolute steamer. So it's just one of those you set your mind on. And
that was on New Year's Eve 2018. I just started having Invisalign, which is the braces when you can't see them. And my dentist had said, you can't really drink stuff, but like you can, maybe gin and tonics are fine. So New Year's Eve, I was like, well, I'm just going to be on the gin and tonics. And so I was drinking so many gin and tonics. And I hadn't had any alcohol since getting the braces in. So it's my first night on the booze. Got really, really drunk. Stayed at this lovely people's house. I didn't really know them that well. Friends of friends.
You knew them before the night started, right?
Yeah, but only vaguely. Yeah. Only vaguely. And I went to sleep completely blasted. Woke up just totally disorientated. Didn't know what room I was in, what house I was in, where I was. I really needed a toilet. Went to what I thought was the door. Basically walked into a walk-in wardrobe and pissed myself.
Oh, yeah.
It was horrible.
The thing is, we've all done that. Yeah.
While saying the word no repeatedly.
Funny enough.
As it was happening, going, no.
Funny enough, I did just that after a night out with Kerridge, actually, to be fair. I mean, mentioned the hotel's name in Henley, big sesh. Yeah, got to bed, sort of woke up, go to the toilet in the middle of the night, door sort of closed, and I was out in the corridor. In my pants.
No.
In my pants. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Never find mess Kerridge has got you into.
I know. So then I was looking for a towel or something, just a cupboard to sort of cover myself up. Sort of door was open and I walked into someone's room.
Oh.
Couldn't believe it. And they were just like led on the bed saying, hello. And I went, oh, hello. And I walked out again. It was so I had to walk down into reception in my pants to say, I've locked myself out. Please, can you let me in?
So was that a night on the floor clearers?
No, it wasn't. That was pre-floor clearers. That was probably Stella.
This is a hotel clearer by the sound of things.
Well, luckily, it was late in the middle of the night. So
James is quite hungover today, so I was really enjoying that floor clearer chat because floor clearers to me sounds like an absolute dream drink. I love ginger beer.
It's a bit of a dangerous one because they taste so good. And
you could do it,
go down very easily.
But you could, all you've done really is scaled it up massively, haven't you? So you could do like a double gin topped up with ginger beer, and I'm sure it's
pretty much.
But that wouldn't be a floor clearer.
No,
clearing the floor.
The floor clearer needs to be. You need to get loud, basically.
Yeah, okay.
You need to get loud and leery. Not too leery where you obviously want to fight anyone, but
in your own pub.
So is your drink, though, for this menu, a gin and tonic or a floor clearer?
Gin and tonic.
It's a gin and tonic.
Yeah, floor clearers. They've been actually retired now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they weren't doing me any favours whatsoever, so they've been retired. Gin and tonic is the drink.
Gin and tonic.
Doesn't pair well with a meal either, a floor clearer.
No. We're going to the dessert now. So, this is always my favourite course. Ed's favourite is the starter.
Yeah. Well, as I was going through, you know, my early stages of my career in the late 80s and 90s, it's got to be a lemon tart.
Lovely.
Lemon tart, a nice, fragrant, acidic lemon tart, because every chef worth their salt at that time had an amazing lemon tart on the menu, be it Marco or the Ruse or Nico, Raymond's. They all had their own version of lemon tart. I think I've got all of them. and I think the best one, the one I would always use, I worked for Novelli, Jean-Christophe Novelli, for 8 years off and on, and he had an amazing one. So I robbed that, and that would probably be my dream dessert.
So what about that makes it the best one?
It's lemony. Proper lemony.
That's what you look for in a lemon tart.
Yeah, just lovely, lovely, sweet, crisp, melt-in-the-mouth pastry, just a lemon tart. You cook it, it's just wobbling, you sort of, you know, got that give in it, just moist and soft and acidic. I like acid.
Yes.
Acid desserts after them. I like acid, so I better not go there. I like acid desserts after a meal, you know. I think it's quite fresh. I don't like heavy stuff. So
lemon tart. Cartmel is home of a very famous sticky toffee pudding.
It is. Yeah. It is, and everyone loves it. I like it. It's all right, but I wouldn't choose.
Don't
that.
Turn them against you now.
No.
19 years of becoming one of them, and now
exactly.
Don't slag off sticky toffee pudding.
Team Cartmel. Team Cartmel. I know. I might have the odd sticky toffee pudding.
The town's famous for it, right?
It is. So, and I think you can buy it in Waitrose now. Actually.
Can you?
Yeah, it's the Cartmel sticky toffee pudding. You can buy in Waitrose, I believe. Yeah.
I kind of I'd have to plan my meal before it if I was going to have something heavy like sticky toffee pudding. I'd have to have like a light main.
I think it's a home thing, isn't it? Not really a restaurant thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely a home thing, you know, when you're like really, really got the munchies and I'm going to stick in a sticky toffee. Apparently, Madonna does it, apparently.
Does she?
Yeah.
Madonna has sticky toffee puddings.
Apparently she gets them shipped over. She
from Cartmel?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
She has them shipped over to her house.
She has them shipped over to
the Madonna.
The Madonna. Yeah, they have they have a very famous fan base, so I think she's the most famous of the lot.
Are you sure it's not Maradona? Because that would make more sense.
He's definitely had too many sticky toffee puddings recently.
He went with the cocaine method of losing weight for a long time.
Clever.
Rather than the sparkling water method.
Yeah.
Do you want to change your starter? I love lemon tart. My mum used to buy the Marks and Spencer's Tarte au Citron for years when I was there, and
they make some amazing tarts in Marks and Spencer's.
Yeah,
have you had the pineapple tart they make? Oh, it's unbelievable. It's the most amazing thing.
Describe this tart.
I didn't say pineapple tart because I didn't want to say I buy my dessert would be a pineapple tart from Marks and Spencer's.
Right,
it's something I can actually make. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like a tart base. It's got this sort of like really sort of nice pineapple type jam in it in the bottom, then a really lovely cream. Of pineapple, it's got quite a vanilla taste to it as well. Really soft, almost like eating meringue is.
Right,
and then it's got a pineapple frosting, icing on the top.
From full pineapple,
and it's unbelievable. But not all Marks and Spencer's do it.
Okay,
you've got to find the right one. So the one in Chichester does it.
Right, okay.
I know it does it. The one in Worthing doesn't. Because I've got a house on the coast and. I've got a guy who's a bit of a shopping fiend.
Yeah,
he just goes around shops and buys the most obscure things, and he found it and he introduced it to me, and I'll be forever in his debt. but it was unbelievable, and yeah, you need to seek it out because it's crazy. Oh,
well,
good.
I'm going to go tart crazy.
Oh, I'm going to try that pineapple
tart. Yeah, I know you are. As soon as you Google ask Simon to describe it, I know you're on board already. Describe it.
I didn't actually Google it. That might have been easier. You know, Marks and Spencer stores, which stock pineapple tart?
Yeah.
That's on the search history. Are you having anything with this lemon tart? Or is it on its own?
Just on its own. Yeah, maybe just glazed on the top. So a little dusting of sugar, blowtorch, got a nice crispy sort of burnt sugar texture on the top.
I'm so happy. We've had chefs on before, but I'm so happy that someone's finally brought a blowtorch in right at the last
I mean, a good blowtorch, but none of these wishy-washy ones you find in Whole Foods, you know, one of the big sort of...
like an industrial one,
proper one, you know.
Scorch it.
Yeah.
Right, well, let me read your menu back to you, see how you feel about it.
Yeah.
You would like sparkling water.
Yeah.
Poppadoms. You would like a Somtam papaya salad. With Singer beer?
Yep.
You would like a moussaka as a main? From, what was it?
Venus Greek Taverna.
You've cooked it at the Venus Greek Taverna.
I've cooked it at the Venus Greek Taverna. Well, I've cooked it everywhere. Remember the recipe for the rest of my life.
So the one on your dream menu is one that you've cooked at the Venus Greek Taverna.
Yeah, that's the one.
Side dish, gratin dauphinoise potatoes. Drink, gin and tonic. Dessert, the Jean-Christophe Novelli's lemon tart.
That's the one.
Mm. Sounds delicious.
Absolutely delicious. Amazing.
Very nice journey as well. The whole up through that menu.
We went to Thailand. We went to Southampton. We've been all over the place.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in, Simon.
It's been a joy.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you.
There it is. The off menu of Simon Rogan. A delicious off menu.
Delish.
I like that. I like that it was lemon tart, and I thought that's nice. That sounds delicious. Feels quite a simple dessert for a chef, and then he just blowtorched it right at the end.
Blowtorched it, but also little pineapple tart shout out.
Oh, shout out for the pineapple tart, which I could see in your eyes. You're definitely going to go out and buy.
It stole the show. Not even on his menu. Stole the show for me.
Did it?
Oh, stole the show.
I don't really like pineapple.
What?
That'll be a secret ingredient in a future episode, pineapple.
Oh, that'll be a dark day for me. I love pineapple. I love it in a tart. I love it in a Nando's wrap.
Talking of secret ingredients, Simon Rogan did not say courgette.
He did not say courgette. Thank you, Simon.
Imagine if he had.
Well, I would have been gobsmacked.
He got the train from the Lake District this morning.
Kick him out like Fred Flintstone.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Kick him out like... Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
Fred Flintstone throws out the dog.
And then
the Dino, doesn't he?
Yeah, and then the dinosaur. Is it a dinosaur?
Yeah.
Well, whatever happens, the animal, his pet, kicks him out.
Yeah, saber-toothed tiger, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it jumps back through the window and then it kicks him out. Yeah. And then he's banging on the door.
I got confused because my go-to Flintstones reference is the car with no bottom.
Yep.
And then it's him sliding down the dinosaur neck, and I'd probably go saber-tooth first. So I was just thinking the other two before I got to that one.
Yeah, and the big old Brontosaurus ribs.
Big old Brontosaurus ribs, of course, at the drive-in. So thank you, Simon Rogan. It was a wonderful menu. It was lovely to meet Simon Rogan. If you like the sound of Simon and his food, if you go on simonrogan.co.uk, there's more info on his restaurants there. I'm really going to try and go to his London restaurant. I'm so excited.
Yeah, hit me up when you're doing it, Ed.
I will, man. I'll hit you up big style.
I will not drink.
You ever will.
Again. Ever again.
You don't think you'll drink ever again? I'm going out for a floor clearer right now.
No way. Never, ever, ever.
Quadruple gin, ginger beer, Angostura bitters, 8 ice cubes in a pint glass.
Okay, I'll drink that.
Yeah. I do a radio show on Sunday mornings on Radio X with Matthew Crosby, and there's a podcast of that. James, who are you and what are you doing?
My name is James Acaster. I'm hungover and I need to lay down.
Thank you, James. So thanks very much for listening. We will see you again another time in the Dream Restaurant.
Don't
bye-bye.
Go hungry.
Don't go. Oh, bye. Don't go hungry.
Ever wondered about the world's greatest mysteries?
Who built the pyramids?
Where is Bigfoot?
I'm over here.
Is time travel possible?
No.
From invisibility to whether aliens are living amongst us. It's Microscope, the improvised comedy show from the award-winning John Kearns and me, Matt Ewins, an all-round nice guy.
Where's it available?
I'll tell ya! iTunes, Spotify, Acast, and all the other places you get podcasts from. It's Microscope!
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell. If you enjoy, there's another podcast just coming out. Oh, no, the podcast is out now.
Yeah. If people have enjoyed Off Menu, will they enjoy Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains? I don't know.
There's a bit of crossover. We talk about a couple of food issues. We talk about cutlery, and that's near food. We reckon it's out now. Not soon, it's now.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. If you like James and if you love Ed, you might get a kick out of this. But yeah, again, no pressure. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.